Yuma County health officials announced 98 new cases of COVID-19 in their Thursday afternoon update, bringing the countywide total to 936. A month ago, that number was under 60. I'm Lou Gum. This is Arizona Edition on KAWC. Also announced in the Thursday update, an additional death related to the coronavirus in Yuma County, bringing the total to 14. Each day, the update also includes a breakdown of individuals infected with COVID-19 by age and sex, and includes the number of county residents in Yuma Regional Medical Center. Thursday afternoon, that number was 56. Dr. Robert Trenchel is CEO of YRMC. He says the increase in numbers is not a surprise. It's what the hospital has prepared for. He says despite some national reports that YRMC is overwhelmed, right now it isn't true. I spoke with Dr. Trenchel Thursday afternoon, just before the Thursday afternoon numbers came out. I want to start with the big question hanging over everything, and that is some reports that a hospital has reached capacity. I know that that's not the case. Can you explain why that's not the case before we get into a little more specifics about the numbers?
Sure. Yeah, no, that is absolutely not the case. You know, we've got bed availability. We've got ICU bed availability. We've got a tiered nursing plan to support where we need it. We've got agency staff we can pull in. So we're not, we're not at capacity by any stretch of the imagination, or overly stressed for that matter, frankly.
That being said, last time I talked to you was April 24th. That day we had 53 cases in Yuma County, 15 people in the hospital. Today, we'll get the report later today, but 838 at this point, 58 people in the hospital, 13 deaths, 14 reported by the hospital. How do you assess those numbers when you see that kind of growth in the number of cases in the county?
Sure. I say that's expected. Unfortunately, expected. Because, you know, we knew there was going to be growth. We knew that Yuma was going to be on the tail end of the peak, so to speak. And I think we're scheduled to peak, I think, around the 11th. So we knew that our stresses on our capacity was going to come later, and we had planned for that. So it's not anything that was unexpected. Obviously the number's gone up, 56 is higher than our previous number, but we're able to manage the number. And that's the real message, is that as the numbers go up, we're able to manage them. Now we have flown some patients out. You know, we've flown out a total of 12 patients since I think Friday, and those are our nursing home patients, not our nursing home, but nursing home patients in the community, Department of Corrections patients, and those patients who would have flown out normally just because they need a higher level of care.
Well, talk about that program that was activated to help expedite those transfers, and my understanding is that that's what that program's for. It's to expedite transfers to other parts of the state.
Absolutely. It's the surge line. It was a great idea what Arizona put together, because what it does is we're able to call this line and transfer a COVID patient, and then they manage where that patient goes, so no one hospital sees an overabundance of COVID patients. So they're able to spread them out throughout the state. For example, over the weekend, many of our patients went to Tucson. Many of our relationships for referrals when we refer out to a higher level of care are in Phoenix. So the surge line is able to really expedite the transfer and make sure they land in the appropriate place. And again, no one hospital is being, overrun with transfers from facilities.
Remind us of YRMC's ICU capacity, and I'm asking in particular because is that a number that we should watch in terms of where you might have some stresses?
Sure, that it is a good number to watch, and it's also a number that we're very aware of, too. So we have a total capacity in the ICU of 42 beds. Currently, we have 29 in the ICU, and 18 of those are COVID patients. Now, what happened, and 12 are on ventilators, so we've got 12 ventilators in the ICU as well. What happens with COVID patients is once they land in the ICU, they're there for a long time. They're typically there for 3 weeks. At 2 to 3 weeks, really, at a minimum. And they're on a vent sometimes for a long period of time as well. So when you talk about stresses to the system, normally when a patient gets in the ICU, they get into the ICU. If they get on a ventilator, they get on a ventilator. But they're usually off the vent and out of the ICU in maybe a week. But COVID patients are sick. I mean, they really are very sick. And they but they're in there for a longer period of time than a quote-unquote regular patient would be. So this is why it causes some stresses. But even for us, you know, we've got the capacity to expand an additional 15 beds in the ICU very easily into our what we call a perioperative area, which is right by our ICU, and it acts similar to an ICU. And then we could do our perioperative patients, you know, elsewhere in the facility. So we could expand, you know, easily another 15 beds. We're not at capacity in the ICU now, but we could expand it even further if needed. And then on the floor, you know, we have a COVID unit on the floor where we cohort many of our patients, so we're able to preserve our PPE. And that, I don't know if I have the specific numbers on that unit, but we're close to capacity in that unit. But what we do is when we reach capacity there, we just open up another unit. You know, we have a total of 238 patients in the hospital right now, including COVID patients. We have 400 beds, so we certainly have capacity.
Your chief medical officer told the Arizona Republic this past weekend that there was a bit of a shortage in terms of ICU staffing. Is that something you're prepared to address?
Sure, yeah, we can address that. So the ICU staffing, what we've done is we needed an additional two nurses, is what he was referring to. We could have gotten those nurses from the surge line, or we could have gotten from an agency that we typically use. We wound up getting them from an agency that we typically use because that's just, it's easier for us. You know, we're used to dealing with surges because we do that every year, right? 100,000 people come down to Yuma every year, and they use our facility pretty vigorously. So we're used to these surges up and down, and we have strong relationships with the staffing agencies, so we can get staffing in here pretty quickly. So that's external staffing. On top of that, we've trained 30, we have a tiered nursing program. So we have a three-tier program, and right now we're in tier zero, which is our lowest, you know, that's how we function normally. Tier one would be we could get an additional 30 nurses that are currently working at Yuma Regional and go work in the ICU. So at the drop of a hat, they could start working there without any slip in quality or patient safety because they've been trained in that. And we did that specifically in response to a pandemic, and now specifically in response to COVID. It's just part of how we operate normally. So there is no question about, you know, having any type of nursing shortage.
Dr. Trenchel, I'm loath to quote social media, but I have seen a few posts on the hospital's page and responding to some articles of ours that outsiders are contributing to your woes, that people are coming in from other areas and using Yuma Regional Medical Center. We know that El Centro Regional Medical Center has had to turn away patients. We talked a little bit about how it's all sort of one medical care system, but can you talk to that at all? Is that how even hospitals think about it?
Sure. So, you know, we're aware of El Centro, and we had actually a call with the California Hospital Association, you know, to see, they wanted to know what we were experiencing here. And we told them, you know, we've seen an uptick, but we're not on diversion like El Centro is. And then, you know, across the border into Mexico as well, there's close to 30,000 people that cross the border legally every day for work, either U.S. to Mexico or Mexico to U.S. And then, you know, we're a bit beholden on how their, you know, public health programs are able to contain the disease, right? So if they're using masks and social distancing, we've seen some uptick from I would say over the borders, but nothing that I would say is highly unusual, or I wouldn't call it even, I would call it really the normal course of business in people that we see that are becoming ill and into the ED.
If we could circle back to those numbers that we get every day now, and they're in the double digits. Overwhelmed, I think, is a media word. I don't think it's a medical word. But when the public, as I asked before, when they see those numbers, it's hard to understand what that really means. What is the media not looking at, or what is the public not getting in terms of information that would make assessing that data easier or perhaps more informed?
Sure. I can give you a triple digit number, and that's 106. And that's the number of patients that have been successfully discharged from the hospital that were COVID positive that were able to walk out of here. You know, you compare that to the unfortunate number of 14 of people that have succumbed to the disease, unfortunately. But by and large, the majority of individuals who even become hospitalized and ill with COVID are discharged healthy and home. And the other number I would focus on is that 80% of the people that are infected with COVID have moderate to no symptoms and never even interact with the healthcare system.
So last question, and I'm going to ask you to put your doctor hat on and not your administrator hat on, if you can. Bluntly, absent a vaccine and with the loosening of restrictions that are opening up the economy again, the region, should everyone plan on being exposed to this virus, whether they become symptomatic or not? Should we just shift our mentality a little bit that you will be exposed and now we just should understand what that means?
You know, that's a great question, Lou. And I would think it's hard to contain the exposure for a disease that's highly contagious and not highly lethal either. I mean, you know, you look at the statistics and deaths versus infection, and it's really, really low. It's higher than the flu, but it's still very low. So, you know, I would treat it more like a severe flu. I mean, I hate to say that, and it's not going to go over well, but it's a highly contagious disease. The mortality is higher than the flu, but it's not as high as was expected and was initially reported. And I think people just need to really just sit back and think about it logistically and realistically, look at the data, and see what that proposes. But I think most people will be exposed to it at some point. And then, you know, when we have the vaccine, we'll really be in a great position, I think, for people feeling much more safe.
Dr. Robert Trenchel is the CEO of Yuma Regional Medical Center. We spoke Thursday afternoon just before Yuma County health officials announced a record 98 new cases of COVID-19 in Yuma County. I'm Lou Gumm. This is Arizona Edition on KAWC. We'll be right back.